my defense, I opened my Twitter account only to pitch this, and as soon as this is shipped, I'm going to shut up on Twitter. Anyway, so today I'm going to be talking about the status of EPBS, and EPBS during this talk is going to mean enshrined payload block separation. This is not the usual meaning, and you'll notice that I'll only mention proposers and builders towards the last couple of slides. The talk is going to be divided in three sections. The first section, I want to convince you for a while that dividing the payload, the execution payload from the consensus block is something that is necessary in Ethereum. It is highly beneficial. It is a scaling factor, and it enables other scaling solutions like PRDAS to actually fulfill its full potential. We have this problem that we have since emerged, which is our tech debt, that we adopted this minimalistic way of merging out of proof of work, in which we included the execution block, the one that has the transactions and everything that we need to modify the Ethereum machine, inside of the consensus block that has the attestations, the deposits, the exits, everything that we need to decide what is our current head. And we distribute them both together. This makes for a large chunk of data that is distributed among the nodes when this data has logically different purposes and logically different validations. What a node does when it gets a block, it needs to get to consensus in two different things. One thing is, what is the status of the network? What is the execution status of the network? The validity of the block. And the other thing is, given two different views of the network, which one, even both of them possibly valid, which one is the one that we consider the head of the chain? These two validations are completely independent, and they are done by two different clients, even two different pieces of software the validator runs in running in the computers. The execution consensus is about validity. The consensus is about which one of the world, the views of the world, is the current one. Because of our tech debt, the way that we validate blocks puts all of the strain of the network in the very first few seconds of the slot. A block is broadcast at the beginning of a slot, and it needs to be validated. It needs to be downloaded entirely by the whole network. And by 4 seconds, validators need to have already checked consensus, executed the execution, checked that the block data was available, in the future checked that inclusion lists were satisfied, and attest for this. The rest of the slot is useless time, essentially. We're just counting attestations, aggregating them. The node doesn't do anything. If anyone here runs a node, you're going to see here the fans going off exactly every 12 seconds. So that's what the Ethereum validation is today. And the question is, can we make this better? Can we make the timings better? Presumably, yes. We have 4 seconds, and actually, we don't use those 4 seconds. But the problem is that validators are incentivized to actually propose their blocks as late as possible so that they can extract more MEV out of them. And these timing games make twiggling with these timings for attestations an impossible problem to solve. If we gave more time to actually sync better blocks, larger blocks, have more blobs in the network, what would happen is that validator would just propose later and extract more MEV. So why separating them? Since we do not need to validate execution to decide what is our head, why not just broadcast the block, which is a minimal block, which is just consensus, validate consensus, decide what is our status of the chain, and then use the rest of those 12 seconds to validate execution, check if the blobs are available, validate inclusion list, do all of the stuff that is actually heavy in the high latency path. And the low latency path, which is validation of consensus, that takes 2 seconds, you just download the tiny block, validate it immediately. It takes 70 milliseconds today to validate the consensus side, and just attest. So that's a scaling feature of separating the payload from the block. So that was the first part of the talk. I hope I convince you that the separation gives us a lot of benefits for Ethereum. Now, the question is, how can we achieve separating the block from the payload? And the minimal features that we need, if we want to separate them, would be this. So what's what we desire of such a separation? We would want to have these validations done completely independent. We want to validate the consensus side in the fast path and the execution side in the slow path. We want to separate the propagation of these two blocks. The large chunks of transactions might take longer to come. The blobs that are the huge chunks of transactions might take longer to come. We do not need to have a very high uplink bandwidth to submit the blobs because it takes 12 seconds to be disseminated. So we solve the bottlenecks that we have today in things like peer DAS or full DAS. And we see immediately one problem, and is that, well, since now you cannot sign the block with the payload, because otherwise we will have a free data availability problem, we need to have those two objects being signed. That's it. That's not so hard. Verifying signatures is not a problem. Here's the real problem. The real problem is that now, whatever the situation, whatever the design, the mechanism designed to separate the block from the payload, you will have to deal with new features, with new situations. Today, a slot either has a block or it doesn't. Those are the two possible status. If you have a consensus block, you have a payload, and if you don't, well, you don't have a payload. But in a situation in which you have validated the block, the consensus block, you attested to it, and it's your head, and the payload might be invalid, or might not come, or the blobs were not available, or it didn't satisfy an inclusion list. The situation is that we have one extra status, which is the status in which the consensus block was valid and the payload was not. And this gives a problem, which is a four-choice problem. You need to change four-choice to account for these statuses. You need to check that if I attested to a block that whose parent did not have a payload, well, that attestation does not count towards a parent that did have a payload. And this is completely independent of any auction mechanism. This is the complication of four-choice. Of course, you need to still provide security that you're not going to be reordered for free. But anyway, so in such a world, the other complication that you have, that client implementers will have, is the fact that we have it enshrined in our coding that we get the block, we validate in certain order, we can validate in parallel execution and consensus, and we all do, because the validations are independent, but then we wait until both validations are done, and we attest. Now, one would naively think that that's easy to separate, because you just send the things that we're doing in parallel, you just know. Just validate consensus, attest, and then validate the execution in the rest, and that's it. But that's not so easy because, unfortunately, the merge was minimalistic, but then we had Capella. And in Capella, we added new messages that came from the consensus layer to the execution layer. In Capella, we have withdrawals that are deducted in the consensus layer, and then later on are credited in the execution layer. If we have them separated, we're going to have to do that logic. Deduct first from withdrawals, and then credit on the execution layer when we see a payload. So that's a complication. And Electra gives us many more headaches. Now in Electra, we have messages in the other direction. And in future forks, we expect to get more and more messages in the direction from the EL, triggered in the EL, towards the consensus layer. These are, for example, deposit requests, withdrawal requests, and so forth, which you will have to change your code in such a way that when the payload comes, you process those. Okay, so the point I'm trying to make is that the complication has nothing to do with neither MEV and the auction mechanism. So now we're going to start moving to auctioning. But before that, let me tell you what the slot will look like in a way in which we separated the payload from the block, regardless of auctioning mechanism. We will have a broadcast. You're going to have to validate quickly execution, which is fast, and then you have the rest of the slot to just get consensus on whether or not the payload was there. Okay, so that was the part of payload block separation. Now we come to the section of proposer builder separation. So I've described the problem, the big lifting of separating the block and the payload is in two sections, changing four choice to achieve consensus on what is the head of the chain and changing clients' implementations on how they sync their block because they need to do things in a essentially different way. They need to access the databases in essentially a different way. But now the question is, well, how do we implement this? How do we achieve an implementation that separates the block and the payload in a minimalistic way? And I want to convince you, well, which is probably hard, but I want to make a case that with minimal assumptions, EIP 7732 is a system that achieves this in an actual minimal way. So we need to decide a way of how the payload appears. And I'm going to talk a little bit about options. There are many ideas going around. They all have acronyms that are hard to remember. EPBS, slot auctions, APS, ETs, ATs, I don't know. But they all more or less are in the same way. There's someone that sells a right to produce a payload. In block auctions, the proposer submits a block, a consensus block, with a commitment to a particular payload. And the builder that's committing for that particular payload promises to pay a value for the rights of producing that payload. In slot auctions, the proposer does not commit to a particular payload. It only commits to a particular builder. And then the builder later on produces any payload that he wishes to produce. There's execution tickets or execution auctions in which the auctioneer is not a validator, but it's the protocol itself. The protocol sells far in advance, 32 slots in advance, either tickets, and then there's a lottery that is run by randomness, and we choose who later, 30 slots later, who proposes the payload, or you can actually sell. The protocol can sell, can hold an auction, and sell the rights to propose a slot, 32 slots in advance. And all of these mechanisms have their trade-offs. None of them come for free. They all of them impact the MEV chain, and they all of them produce different kinds of centralizations. All of these mechanisms that I'm describing here, you can or may not run them with MEV burn. That means that even if the proposer is choosing and getting some value out of the builder, you could, in principle, include a burning of that value towards the protocol. The one that I didn't include is no auction, but that's certainly possible. We wanted to set, it was about enshrined payload block separation. In principle, I could just enforce that the proposer is the same signature as the builder, keep everything exactly as it is today in the MEV chain, and keep using MEVBoost. Nothing would change except that we have all the machinery to separate the block and the payload. However, if we've already did the heavy lifting, which is changing for choice and changing block processing, changing the auction is zero work for us. Changing the auction is nothing because the auction, we already have it. We have the code that requests header from the builder. We don't need to change that. The only thing that we need to check is that the signature will be different. It's coming from a particular validator. So the heavy lifting is done in a minimal way, and adding an auction to get block auctions is trivial. So what are the things that actually change? The problems that adding the auction increases is that in a world in which the proposer and the builders may be different, then you need to give certain safeties to the builder. If the proposer and the builder is the same, then you don't care about protecting the builder if the payload came late or if the builder wanted to withhold the payload. This is because, well, the proposer is the same as the builder. He should have sent everything together. But in a world in which the proposer and the builder are different, you need to protect the builder. You need to give assurances to the builder that if the builder submitted his block on time, the block is canonical, the payload is canonical. And you need to give assurances of a hard one. It's a new situation. This was a previous slide where the three phenomena could happen. This is the block was full. Here, the proposer of slot N is building on top of an empty slot. Here, the proposer of slot N is reorging entirely the previous block. But now we have a new situation in which the proposer of slot N is trying to make the builder pay for a payload that he didn't reveal because the previous block was weak. So we need to prevent that situation from happening. And this is a minimal change, luckily for us. EF researchers on 4Choice are very good. And we have minimal solutions for this that are a tiny bit more of code to the previous heavy lifting, which is dealing with the whole tree. So how does the EPBS slot actually work on an auction mechanism? The builder, the proposer, at the beginning of the slot, requests, exactly as with MEVBoost today, with the exact lines of code, will request directly from the builders, not the relays, their best bid. It would choose whatever bid he wants, it would include it in the block, and submit its consensus block that can be validated immediately before 3 seconds. We could have been 2 seconds, actually, because we don't need time to propose blocks, consensus blocks. The rest of the slot, well, the builder will now have to be protected, is going to count attestations for that block. It's going to count for 1 second until he reaches enough attestations. In practice, it's going to be 40% of attestations. Once the builder saw 40% of attestations for the block, the builder knows that that block cannot be reorged. Therefore, the builder reveals his payload. This is 4 seconds. So you have since then until the very next slot to validate the payload. You can just increase the gas limit a lot if we could manage to solve the disk, the state growth problem. You can increase the blob number a lot because now we have 12 seconds to distribute the blocks. You don't have two seconds to distribute the blobs. Later on, there's a light vote. There's a light vote by a committee of 512 members. And that vote is to signal the rest of the chain that the payload was on time, that the next proposer should not reorder the payload. There are other designs that do not include a light vote. There were previous designs that included a full vote, an aggregated vote, an attestation of the whole committee for the payload or not. But this design is robust enough, and it requires only 512 signatures. So let me tell you our implementation statuses of, it's an empty video, but let me tell you our implementation status of this. So we wanted to have a proof of concept model for EPBS, and we have it. We are finalizing EPBS, locally constructing blocks, so we're not contacting a builder, but we are finalizing a network that has the payload and the block separated. Two consensus clients have already the implementations underway. Teku, I believe, is close to being an interop. Nimbus has two EPF working on this. Lodestar and Lighthouse, I think they initiated that. At least they have the typing, but they haven't advanced much more. But the point is that it took us a couple of months of sitting down and coding, not more. It's not production code, but it's certainly ready. The EIP is ready to go. As I described, there's no changes. I'm only mentioning consensus layer changes. There's no changes on the execution layer. That's why the execution layer guys are happy, because we're going to give them a lot of time to validate the block without them writing a single line of code. However, the interaction with Fossil is not trivial. If we want to include inclusion lists, which is something that we really need in Ethereum, we're going to have to involve the execution layer. And the interaction of Fossil with EIP, with EPBS is not entirely trivial. It's not something that I'll describe today here. All right? Thank you very much, guys.
All right. We'll go through some questions from most upvoted. Are there any other protocols or message propagation mechanism being explored other than libp2b?
Not that I know.
Simple answer. After implementing EPBS on Prism, how would you rate the complexity of changing the entire consensus execution, validation, sync, et cetera, while still maintaining backwards compatibility?
That's a great question. It was much harder than I thought. Fortress was the problem. We have now because we iterated several times until we realized what is the right way of doing it. So now, backwards looking, there was a very simple way of doing it. So my original implementation was hard, but now we have a very simple change. As I said, in 2 months, we did it. Now I believe, knowing what is the right design, we could have done it in 2 weeks.
What if there's a reorg larger than depth of one?
Nothing changes. Absolutely nothing changes. For choice, my original design used boosts to rely on if the block was poor and the builder did not want to reveal the payload, my original four-choice design relied on the network reorging the whole thing. Luckily, Francesco came up with a simpler solution that doesn't touch four-choice at all. It's the usual LMD ghost mechanism without any boosts. So four-choice is not different in the way that we count weights. The only difference is in the way that there are nodes that may or may not have a payload.
What do you think about implementing consensus execution separation without EPBS?
I think the way I phrase this talk is that there's a big chunk of changes that are completely independent of any kind of mechanism for auctioning, and those changes are going to have to be included in any known roadmap for Ethereum. Ethereum, in all of the known roadmaps for Ethereum, we have this separation between payload and block, and that's the heavy lifting that has been done. Now you need to put on top of this an auction just to, as an implementation detail, and the reason why we chose block auctions is because I do not know how to implement any of the other ones. And if anyone gives me an actual spec to implement execution tickets or future slots without single slot finality, I'll be happy to code it. But these are the only two that we actually have a spec, and we know that it's robust and safe.
What about the impact on the late block of Proposer Boost?
Could you repeat that one?
What about the impact on the late block of Proposer Boost?
I'm not sure if I understand the question, but the question is perhaps that if a block comes late, Proposer Boost can reorg it. Yes, and this is something that we do today. Today, in order to not incentivize seeing late blocks, we actually have seen blocks coming in the early days at 12 seconds trying to reorg the next block. In order to not incentivize this, we actually actively reorg a block that comes late, and that's not going to change here. The only thing that is going to change is that the builder has a safety mechanism that if the block came late with a commitment to its payload, then the builder may not reveal it because he knows that it's not going to be forced to pay because it has to be reorged.
Does this proposed change require an ETH spec change or an EIP, or does it only require client implementation?
It is a consensus-breaking protocol. It's not backwards compatible. It requires an EIP. The EIP is 7732.
We have two more minutes, so if anybody has a live question that they want to ask.
Oh, that's a great question.
Can you repeat the question?
So the question is whether or not we've implemented sync. No, I have not. Purposely, because I really wanted to have the proof of concept before DevCon. Nothing really changes though, because for sync, you can piggyback what we already have today. So for sync, you're going to send the full block together.
Any more?
Are you afraid that given the changes and introduction of new features of the off-chain PBS pipeline, we are soon going to reach a point of no return where ePBS is pretty hard to even be realized?
I'm not sure I understand the question, I'm sorry.
For example, when PBS started, we had the relayer just do one thing, but then we did stuff like optimistic relays. Recently, there have been proposals of stuff like gateways, which again relays do. So we keep adding complexity into the off-chain PBS stuff that would need to be matched or improved within ePBS. Is this a problem that you see foresee, or is this a viable risk for you?
I don't see this. I can tell you something that I see as a risk. I don't see this particular thing a risk because complexity on the relay, all that it will change. What ePBS, the way we're proposing it, what it does is it allows the builder to be a relay directly, permissionlessly. So what you're describing to me sounds like builders in the protocol, which they already are because relays are builders, they will have to have this complexity if they want to be competitive in the market. But from the protocol perspective, we don't care. What I do see as a risk, though, is other things that are being piggybacked on PBS. Say, for example, pre-confirmations and all of these extra markets that are being done. I would ask for the teams that are working on pre-confs to make it compatible, forward-looking compatible with mechanisms of separation.
And if the person who answered the multiple concurrent proposer question wants to ask him afterwards, we're out of time for questions, but he'll be around in the room. Give a hand to POTUS.